Hey, Dave Hodges here. I just wanted to talk to you before we go into an interview that we're going to do with Tosh Pumley and his author. It's written his book. And Tosh was in the CIA and he was connected with the Kennedy assassination. Now, I know this isn't a popular topic anymore, but you need to hear me on this. First of all, you're going to hear a revelation that's never been aired before. First time here, we have the exclusive. The knowledge that Kennedy was going to be killed was known and it was acted upon by a group. I hate to call them mercenaries because they were people from different agencies and military that put together a group to try to interdict and stop the assassination. Unfortunately, they failed. They did catch up with a couple of the assassins. You'll hear about that. But this is a never heard before story, but this is why this is important. Charlie tried to warn people that he thought he was going to be killed. This is well known. I've been told this by an insider. Many people have. And these people are afraid for their lives, understandably. They killed Charlie, they'll kill him. Well, the same thing is here. There's usually warnings in these assassinations, and this is a point I want to make. But I think this story you're going to find fascinating because it was about a group of people that tried to interdict the situation, intervene, and unfortunately they failed. But it's an amazing story. And it's one that I think we need to take to heart because so much of what I've learned about the Charlie Kirk assassination, and people have complimented me because I've been able to connect the dots, that's because of my experience with JFK. And we really need to keep our noses to the grindstone on this. And we need to bring up Kennedy as it relates to other assassinations. Charlie won't be the last. And it's always establishment. It's always for a purpose. It's always to deceive. And I have to tell you, I'm sick of it. And we need to do our best to expose it. Enjoy the interview. It's incredible. Hello, America, and to our dwindling friends around the world, welcome to the Common Sense Show. We are the show that's freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. And we're going to be talking about an aspect of the Kennedy assassination today, actually a few aspects. And this has really come back into play, as you've heard, when I've looked at the Charlie Kirk situation, and I'm dropping a bombshell this afternoon. You guys know that I've pulled a lot from the JFK situation. It's important we still look at this, even though it's over 60 years old now, because of the fact that the game plan keeps repeating. And it's just amazing that they don't think we're going to figure this out. But when the cover-up goes into the White House, you're kind of limited on your legal options. But we're going to sit here, we're going to expose some things today with our two guests. Before we join our guests, need to let you know we're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And this war is taking our economy over the cliff. And do you think the banks can be far behind? And the Dodd-Frank Law 2010 says they can keep your money. They can give you a percentage of your money. They can do what they want because you're now declared to be an unsecured creditor. Noble Gold can help you fix this. I've been a customer for 9 years. I sleep better at night knowing they really can't touch me unless it's just outright theft. And when government gets that tyrannical, there's nothing anybody can do. But I don't think it's going to go to that level. Take the steps you need right now to protect yourself. Call 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. Tell them I told you to call. And if you forget the number, and that's okay, you can simply go to DaveHodgesGold.com. That's DaveHodgesGold.com. Well, our guests are Robert Tosh Plumley and Ralph Pizzullo. And Robert, let's put it this way. He did some interesting covert aviation operations for U.S. Intel, beginning as early as the 1950s. And he did these missions in the Caribbean, Latin America, and involved weapons transfers, intelligence logistics, clandestine operations, targeting Cuba. Uh-oh, Operation Mongoose, maybe? I'll ask. And Mr. Plumley has provided statements to investigators examining intelligence activities and the Kennedy assassination over several decades. Also joining us is Ralph Pizzullo. Is a New York Times best-selling author and award-winning playwright and screenwriter. He's the host of the popular podcast Heroes Behind Headlines, which is ranked in the top 1% of all podcasts in the world. Born in New York City, he grew up in Mexico, Vietnam, Bolivia, Colombia, Guatemala, Uruguay, Nicaragua, and he's the son, that's how you travel, of a U.S. diplomat. His over 30 books include New York Times bestsellers Jawbreaker, Inside SEAL Team 6, Most Evil, Zero Footprint, Left of Bloom and Ghost, and I love this one. I've heard about this book a lot. The Great Chinese Art Heist and Stolen Elections, The Takedown of Democracies Worldwide. Gentlemen, welcome. It's really an honor to have you on the show. And I can't wait to get into this topic. As I told you before, I was very good friends with Jim Mars. And so I come at that pretty much from that perspective. But I don't think we know everything there is to know. So this is why I think it's important we get the facts on the table. Because, like I said, the authorities, when they're covering up an assassination, they keep going back to the same playbook. It's just absolutely amazing to me. So, gentlemen, where's our starting point in this?
I think you should start with Tosh's background because he was a juvenile delinquent. He was the product of a broken home in Dallas after the war, after World War II. And he was recruited at a very early age into a sort of secret military intelligence unit. And from there, he's been a what they call a CIA contract pilot for all of his career. So he always worked deep cover. He worked for cutout companies. He always had a paycheck. And he was called in to do different, to fly dignitaries, to fly arms to Cuba and other countries. And all of this was done. I mean, he never he would just get orders from people. They called them bumps in those days. And he was just told to go to a particular airport. There was a plane waiting for him with a flight plan, and one of these flight plans took him to Dallas on the day of Kennedy's assassination.
Does Air America enter into this in the background, Tosh?
Well, some friends of mine, I was off and on with Air America, mainly as a flight, what they call a flight mechanic, but not to the extent that I worked full time for Air America. Air America came along more after, my flying on that part was a little earlier, than Air America.
So your job in these logistics was transport.
The way it worked, we would be just sitting around the airport at lounge, and then we would be getting an assignment to go to a particular place, pick up an aircraft. Inside that aircraft would be instructions, sometimes a flight plan or maps, and then that would be the mission. We would never really know exactly what the total mission would be. Our job was mainly just going from point A to point B, with whatever cargo that we were assigned to be carrying at that point. So you mentioned Jim Mars. He was a good friend of mine also. Jim and I spent a lot of time together and a lot of time in Miami. Do you know about his death when he died?
There's a lot of mystery about it. Annie DiRiso was a good friend of his. She used to be my news director, and I think there was a little controversy there myself.
Well, I don't know about the conspiracy, but when he passed away, do you know how he went away?
Well, what we were told was it was a heart attack.
Yeah, heart attack. Okay. He just bought a new place at Spring Lake, there in Texas. So on the when we sent him away, we had a big wake for him. So Jim had bought a Civil War cannon. He was a Civil War freak, so to
Yeah, he used
speak.
to do the reenactments, I know.
Yeah, right. So anyway, in this cannon, we put his ashes inside the cannon and fired the cannon off at his new house there in Springfield. So that's how Jim
Oh, Annie
that's
told
how
me she
Jim went
heard that
away.
story. Yeah, Annie, yeah, that's funny. I guess that story's true then.
It was quite a deal. I mean, that's the way he wanted to go, and he just got his new home there in Springfield, just built it, And then he had his heart attack and passed away. You know, I think his death was not natural. I don't think there was anything like that. He was having some problems, you know, but we spent a lot of time in Miami and went back and saw Antonio Vinciana and a lot of the Cuban guys when we was going to do research for another book that I was going to do. It was called The Black Knights of Cuba. And so we were down there researching, and he did a lot of good work. He was a good man. I miss him. Anyway, but as far as my flying, I started out like Ralph said, as a young man, juvenile delinquent. Our recruitment was based on the old movie, like the Dirty Dozen in World War II, where they took prisoners out of prisons and put them on special forces behind in German enemy lines. So I don't know, there was a movie based on that. So there was a trial team set up in Fort Bliss, Texas. I run away from home when I was 14, joined the Texas National Guard, and then later switched into the regular army at 15, at 16 actually. And then as a result of that, at a hand grenade incident out at Fort Bliss, my drill instructor had taken a hand grenade and threw it in the bunker where me and another guy were throwing hand grenades at a little white post. And I lost you here. But our drill instructor threw a grenade in the hole where we were, and I picked it up and threw it back at him. And it was a practice grenade, and white phosphorus went all over him and everything. But anyway, they sent me in front of the commanding officer and told me, why did I try to frag my drill instructor? And I told him, I said, well, he threw a grenade in a bunker where Leroy and I was, and I wasn't going to give him a chance to throw another one in. So that was the reason I threw it back. Well, there was two CID people there, Criminal Investigation Detachment, and they come up to me and said, well, I had moxie. And I thought they were accusing me of having a VD, you know, a disease. So I got smart with him, and so one thing led to another. But as a result of that, that was the beginning of me making contact with recruiters for the Central Intelligence Agency, who was running that program at Fort Bliss, Texas, that test program for young guys. There was a total of 55 of us that was in that program. So I don't know, I don't mean to ramble here, but that's sort of how I got connected with the people that was running this new test program. That was back in the 55, 56 era. And as a result of that's how I ended up getting my pilot's license. I went through the GI Bill on that, qualified, got my pilot's license, and then I started flying guns and ammunition to Fidel Castro, which was a new rebel at that point in time, which was known as the M26-7 Cuban Revolution. Anyway, so I'll back off here a little bit. I don't know if that explains anything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you go back to the when the Castro was a good guy and on our side.
That's right.
Yeah,
Bosch
right.
was flying weapons to Fidel Castro when he had just a small band of rebels in the mountains. I think there were like
Right.
20 of them. And then
Well.
a year after that, he attended the School of Illusionary Warfare with Lee Harvey Oswald in the Outer Banks in North Carolina.
What was the name of the school?
That was
School
good.
of Illusionary Warfare.
Wow. Is that before Oswald went to the U-2 spy plane base?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. That was when in 58, 59, right when I got, I'd been flying guns in and out of Cuba for this rebel who I met. And as a result of that, we got, you know, got recruited to start carrying guns and ammunition to this little old rebel. At the same time, according to the Pan American Treaty, we were sending tanks and airplanes to Batista, and then we were sending small arms, M1s, and Band-Aids to a rebel who was operating in the Sierra Madre Mountains of Cuba. So we were playing at that point in the early time on the weapons. We were actually supporting both sides. We were
Yeah.
supporting Batista as well as we were supporting a new rebel to overthrow the Batista regime of Cuba at that point in time. So and I was active in that part. And then as far as School of the Illusionary Warfare, the group that from Fort Bliss in 58-59 was sent to the illusionary, what they call the illusionary warfare training. That was a PSYOPs program run by Gottlob, Sidney Gottlob, who was a chemist. And that led into a program called MK Ultra. Right. So anyway, I could go rant. I don't want to stop me from rambling, Ralph. Okay.
No, I got it. That's interesting. Do you happen to know what Oswald was being trained for?
Yeah, he was the group was divided up into many different sections. Mine was, I was being trained out to be a pilot, bus driver, whatever you want to call us, and psych warfare, to go in and capture radio stations and do propaganda, and things like that in foreign countries. That was one part. Oswald was actually in Russia, training for to speak. He's in language school, training there.
Right.
They had a casino there at that time, and we used to go and hang out at the casino there on Nags Island, and that's where I'm run into Lee originally, and so. But he was studying language, Russian, and that was. He was with other guys who were training, some of them training for French. We were training infiltration. That was the word I was looking for. So he was in a what they call an infiltration training program for defectors. Now, Victor Marchetti wrote about that in his book, The Cult of Intelligence, and the CIA went ballistic because at that point, that was a very top secret operation that was going on there, and also at Port Harvey, which was north of Norton Nag's Head. That was another very secret operation back in the 50s and the 60s. Even to this day, there's still documents that have not been released that pertain to those two training bases, Nag's Head and Port Harvey.
I want to ask you about Oswald for a second on this too, because I know he was trained to speak Russian. He defected to Russia. You don't do this with a private in the Marine Corps, but that's what they did. And some people that I've talked to through the years thinks that his trade-off of information was, we'll give the Russians something so we can gain their confidence and we get more intel back, and I'm pretending to be a defector, and that his information led to the shoot down of Powers in the U-2 spy plane incident. Is that true?
Well, I wouldn't know, but I don't think that, I mean, this conspiracy stuff, I mean, every twig or every time the wind blows, there's a new theory comes up about the motive behind all that. In my opinion, it was much more simpler, simple. It was a lot more simple than.
Well, according to the Russian defector, Norchenko, he was Oswald's. He was in the KGB. Norchenko was, and he was Oswald's contact. And according to him, they never trusted the KGB. Never trusted Oswald because his Russian was so good, it was almost perfect. And they sent him off to a television factory, electronics factory, in Minsk. That's where he met his wife. And he was there for about a year, and he wasn't doing any intelligence. And so he grew disillusioned and petitioned to come back to the United States. So he wasn't really involved in any operations in the Soviet Union.
Do you know what I always found odd, though, was that the State Department gave he and his wife travel money to come back to the U.S., and there's a lot of people that felt he should have been arrested as a traitor.
Well, that was because of the Attorney General Robert Kennedy. So the Kennedys set up something. It's covered in our book. They set up something called CANCOM, Kennedy Communications, and Lee Harvey Oswald was recruited into that unit because they didn't, after the Bay of Pigs, they didn't really trust the CIA, and they started to realize that the CIA, people in the CIA and in the Pentagon We're communicating. We're not telling them everything. And so they set up their own sort of intelligence unit. And Robert Kennedy recruited Lee Harvey Oswald to be part of that.
But also, Lee was working with the FBI in Dallas as a paid informant. That's how he was making a little bit of extra money. Had nothing to do with government. Well, had a lot to do with the government. But so he was had law enforcement contact in Dallas as an informant for the FBI. That was Hostie. Later, Hostie was authorized or told by Hoover to destroy all the files, referencing, I think this is recorded or has been released, declassified over the years, where Hoover had directed the Dallas FBI to destroy those files. Those files pertain to the recruitment of Lee working both as a confidential informant for the FBI to infiltrate or penetrate various organizations. One of them was some of the gun running that was going on out of Dallas to Cuba on stealing guns and ammunitions from National Guard armories and then filtering those guns and ammunitions through intermediaries into Miami, Florida, and then eventually into Cuba in support of Castro. So
No.
that,
These were anti-Castro rebels at
yeah,
this point.
anti-Castro rebels, right? Yeah, I got my timelines I messed up.
That's it.
So,
That's interesting. Because on the series, The Men Who Killed Kennedy, they interviewed a detective from Miami that had done undercover work and they busted a gun runner in Miami and he laid out the Kennedy assassination and he claims their intel to the Secret Service averted what would have been an assassination there. Do you know about that?
well, there was prior knowledge. I mean, this was the whole thing. Even to this day, the FBI doesn't really want known about. There was a lot of prior knowledge from various sources. Am I right here, Ralph?
There were several attempts on the president's life
Right.
before Dallas. There was an
Right.
aborted attempt in Chicago, and then there was one in Miami.
Right. And then we have Dinkin over in France, who was a cryptologist that intercepted information of recruiting Algerian assassins, retired Algerian assassins, to come and do a special op program in the United States. And Eugene Dinkin had notified or tried to notify through proper channels, and he was blocked. And so there was, the Pentagon, mainly, that's where the Pentagon had received that information. And they're the responsible for sending a team, that team that I'm familiar with, into Dallas with logistical support of the CIA. So it wasn't a CIA operation, it was a Pentagon operation from information on a hit on the President of the United States. It was going to be done in Dallas. And I think the date was the 28th of November, was the information that Dinkin had. And as a result of that, they end up putting Dinkin in a psychiatric ward, and tried to block his information. And anyway, there's a little, there's all kinds of history. But because of that, a lot of the conspiracy angles have sprung off because of those dealings back at that particular
Okay,
time.
the team that went into Dealey Plaza, they were, who were they?
They were recruited by the Pentagon. It was a Pentagon abort team. So somebody in the Pentagon got word that there was going to be an attempt on the president in Dallas. And Tosh was recruited to fly the team from Lacahatchee in West Palm Beach to Dallas. And the team, and among the team members were several Cuba, anti-Castro Cubans, Johnny Roselli, and E. Howard Hunt.
No
kidding. Okay. All right. I need to ask you this because I don't know if this is comes into your purview or not, but Jim and I, before he left us, we were looking at the Corsican Mafia out of Marseille, France. Were they involved in this?
Well, that's back to where I was talking earlier. The information that came from Eugene Deakin was a private. He was an Army private, and that was passed to the Pentagon. His information, and that's where the Corsicans come in. The French guys, Jean Sultra was one of them, or the name popped up, Jean Sultra. But that's where the recruitment of the Algerian assassin team originated from, was from information from Private Eugene Deakin, who actually contacted the Attorney General at that time to try to give this information that he had received through various methods of intelligence gathering that he was trained to do. And he tried to pass that to proper officials. At his point in time, his proper officials was through the Pentagon, because he was a military, he was a cryptologist, worked with codes and deciphering information. So he deciphered this information from multiple sources that he had obtained while working over and deal. He even went to Switzerland to try to get the information to the team. Now, I have a real problem with the word abort. That word to me means stop something that we started. So the Pentagon formed an abort team to go into Dallas to stop something that they knew that was started. Now, were they involved or were they not involved? I mean, then this gets into all kinds of conspiracy theories. But the reality of it was that the information reliable came from an Army private, as well as others. The information came from some of the Cubans. There was supposed to be a bazooka fired on Air Force One at West Palm Beach by some people, that was Cubans that was upset about the Bay of Pigs situation. So there was all kinds of rumors about they were going to kill Kennedy. This particular rumor was very, very pointed. So I don't know if that explains anything, but that's my point of view.
So your job was to fly that team in. How did they get away from that?
My job at that point in time, I mean, quarterbacking is easy to do, after 60 years. But at that point in time, I had no idea what the hell the mission was. My job was a
Of course.
pilot. I was a co-pilot. I was a young guy. I was in my 20s, So I had no idea. Didn't care, So the people on board, I mean, it would be just like you getting on an airplane and having some mafia figure on seat 5A in the back of the plane. And just because he was on your airplane, you're buddies with him. You know everything about him. You know where he's going to go. He knows what his mission is. So that's sort of the way it worked at that point in time, as far as some of us pilots were concerned. We didn't really know what the mechanics of the mission was. All we knew is that our part. I mean, everything was so compartmentalized. I mean,
Course.
left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing.
Yeah,
So
that makes a lot of sense. So you would have nothing to do with the extraction of the team.
no.
So Wintosh reached Dallas. He was asked, one of the Cubans that he knew, one of the anti-Castro Cubans, asked him to accompany him, and their role was to be on the South Knoll, opposite the grassy knoll, and to look for a shooting team there, right? And so they surveyed the area. They crossed the parking lot, and then they reached the grassy the knoll on the south side, and they were stationed there, and they saw the limousine come around, turn onto Elm Street, and they heard the shots go off. In fact, some of the shots went right over their heads. So there was there were that they. They concluded that there was a shooter in the parking lot of the South Knoll. And actually, there are photographs that were taken by by a UPI photographer named Kanser Yeti that shows a shooter in the background along the lip of the parking lot of the South Knoll.
Right. Now, see, Ralph covered this. Well, we both covered this pretty good in the book, Deep Cover, Shallow Graves. That's well, it's out now. And we went into pretty good detail on that. My position was I flew him into Dallas or Redbird Airport, and I was just going to hang out at Redbird until the crew came back and was ready to go back to Miami for debriefing. But Sergio, my Cuban friend, asked me, he says, do you want to go see the president? And I, rather than hang out at the Oak Cliff Country Club, I said, which is right across from Redbird Airport, I said, yeah. I said, hell, I'd love to see the president. So that was my position going to Dealey Plaza. So Sergio's was part of the team, and his position was on the south side to spot for triangulation shooting.
Okay.
They were there to mainly stop the assassination, the abort. That was the reason for the abort team. They were dispatched out of the Pentagon. We had CIA logistical support. And so we went to the south side. There was other teams on the north side. We had what they call Motorola walkie-talkies in those days. To communicate with the north side and the south side. For some reason, those walkie-talkies crystals had been changed, and they could not be, we couldn't communicate Sergio couldn't communicate with the other side. Gator, one of the Cubans, was sitting next to a guy which is known as the Umbrella Man, that's another story. And he kept doing it like this, like cutthroat. I can't communicate, can't communicate. He had a radio in his back pocket after the deal, walking away. You can see the antenna. So that was botched up from the beginning, from somewhere when those radios were dispatched to the two teams or the three teams or however many damn teams were there. The communication was messed up. So the north side couldn't communicate with the south side. That was the CIA boys. So I was there mainly. Now, when the shots happened, it happened over our left shoulder. We were directly across from where the limousine come by, where Gator was sitting with the umbrella guy.
When you mean across, do you mean you were opposite the picket fence?
We were opposite. Yeah, we were on the south side, opposite of the famous picket fence. Area.
Yeah, and a lot of ballistic research has been done by Sherry Feister and Dr. David Bantick, showing one of the shots, the headshots, came from that location.
Yeah, we covered that pretty well in Deep Cover, Shallow Graves. In fact, Ralph did a fantastic job of working this in because, I mean, it's so simple, it's complicated. We could talk about it for, like I said, you can do 15,000 pages of a book and 5 pages about JFK, and everybody's going to go back about those 5 pages. What happened? What happened? What happened? Well, that's what happened. I mean, that's the reason. Friends of mine, like Johnny Rosselli, I had prior contact with him. Howard Hunt, good friend of mine, knew that family before St. John was just a little kid. In fact, St. John wrote the afterword for the book Deep Cover, Shallow Graves that Ralph and I did. Another famous researcher was Dick Russell, who wrote the beginning of Deep Cover. These guys were deep JFK researchers, and it was a great honor for me to have them write afterwards and a foreword for the book. Which covers in detail the JFK assassination from my point of view.
Dave, I think one very important thing that is covered in the book that nobody has ever written about before is that the abort team on the grassy knoll, on the North Knoll, they captured two of the shooters and they killed them.
Right. They were dead before Roswell was killed. And we covered that in detail.
Where did they shoot them at?
So I shot them in a car. going across Katy Street Viaduct, across Trinity River, over to the old ballpark, which was the Texas Stadium,
Okay.
and that's where they buried him. So that's in the book, detailed out.
And
Yes.
one of them was Cuban, and the other one was spoke
French.
French. We don't know if he
Yes.
was French or not,
Yes.
but he spoke French.
He spoke French.
Interesting. The one thing that Jim and I landed on later was the Marianne Moorman photo, and then it was enhanced over several years. And then you had the testimony of someone, I forget his name, Arnold, last name Arnold, who said he saw the assassin and his spotter behind the picket fence. And then he encountered the assassin who took his film from him. And then they walked away from the picket fence back over the railroad yard. Can you confirm that at all?
Well, I can't confirm. What I do in the book, or what I try to do, and not just in the book for the 60 something plus years, I try to stay strictly with what I knew,
We
what
know,
I
okay.
felt, what I saw. I try to stay away from the theories. There's a lot of twisting, a lot of crazy stuff out there. As far as that, when they tried to exfiltrate, that's the word we use, exfiltrate the plaza, one of the teams intercepted two of them coming down the west side of the Triple Underpass Railroad embankment to a muddy parking lot on the other side, west side of the Triple Underpass.
Right.
They were captured at that point, put in a car, pretty well beat up, put one of them put in a car, and drove across Katy Street Viaduct, across the Trinity River to the old, which I re reference as the Texas Stadium. It used to be the old Burnett Field there in Dallas. It was tore down some years ago when they put the freeways across there. But they drove by, and on the process at the Texas Stadium, they pulled one of the assassins, attempted assassin. He could have shot the president. Nobody would know. But anyway, he was pulled out of the car, and he was shot there and buried there at the Trinity River levee. Some years later, in the Dallas Times Herald, when they were doing the freeway build up there and taking down the stadium, they found human bones there at that area. They covered Dallas Times Herald covered the story. I forget, Jim Mars knows all this, and we talked about it. In fact, it's on the record at the North Texas State University, which people can verify what I'm saying if they want to take the time to go there. That's what Ralph and I can do. We try to point people where to go to get the documentation to substantiate what we're talking about, or what we talked about in the book, Deep Cover, Shallow Graves. At that point in time, that's where the Texas Stadium, the assassins that were taken as they were exfiltrating the plaza, was captured by the other team on the north side, and put in a car, driven across the Trinity River on Katy Street Viaduct. And then when they were shot, one of them was shot and killed and buried right behind the third baseline there at the old Texas Stadium. We covered that pretty much in detail.
Yeah, they were both shot. They were both
Yeah,
shot.
both shot.
What's
Reminds me of the
interesting.
Jimmy Hoffa legend, where he was allegedly buried under
Yeah.
Giant Stadium.
Well, in
I wanted to.
my case, real fast, just to get to that's always been a real touchy story, a Plumlee story, whatever you want to call it, an alleged. But in the files that they're fighting on now to release, that story is there. It was told in 1964, April, and a map was drawn for the FBI by me in April of 1964, when they had stopped me for questioning and then allegedly saying that I wrote hot checks, which was not true. The point was the FBI had prior knowledge through Dallas of a hit on the president, and they did not forward that information to the Secret Service. And J. Edgar Hoover, on my FOIA files, you can check this out, verify, His initials are on my files through FOIA, JEH, J. Edgar Hoover. Raises the question, why was Hoover messing, or why was my files, personal files, being reviewed by the director of the FBI? The story I just told you about the assassins escaping and being killed and buried, which is in our book, Deep Cover, Shallow Graves, is a story to this day that the FBI does not want told, and the CIA does not want told. I'm hoping now that Trump has signed this executive order that those documents will be released, which tells the story and the documentation of the recruitment of the French underground, which involved Jean Salter, and some of that. But anyway, I don't let me get rambling here.
Let me throw a couple names at you from the French group. Christian David, Lucien Sarti, does that ring a bell at all?
Well, these names, they come up. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. Hell,
Okay.
in those days, I didn't even know what my name was. I had five separate aliases and had three red passports under different names, you know. So, you know, in our group, names meant nothing.
Well,
Okay.
what
Understood.
Tosh does know is that on the flight out, so that
Yeah.
afternoon after the assassination, they flew out of Dallas, and
Right.
one of the people who was on the plane with him was also French, and
Right.
they ended up back in Miami. Tosh flew was returned to Lockahatchie, and when he was at Lockahatchie, he was arrested. He was arrested by Denver policemen, who flew him back to Denver on a bad check charge. In Denver, he was thrown into prison with a man. His cellmate was a guy who was in prison for murder,
Jerry Stelly.
Jerry Stelly. And this man, after a couple of days, confessed that he had put in the cell with Tosh to kill him.
It's taking me out, yeah. Well, Jerry Stelly and I became good friends. Later, Jerry was in, it wasn't a prison, it was a county jail, Denver County Jail. And they extradited me from after our debriefing, coming back from Dallas. They arrested me for obtaining lodging under false pretenses, and then ended up extraditing me at a cost of $5,000 on a $25 check, insufficient fund check, that was never produced in court. Judge Feinsilver sentenced me to an indefinite stay in the Colorado State Reformatory on a $25 check.
Did you have an
Anyway,
attorney?
Ken Selby. I had an attorney, and he fought it. I mean, there's a record of all this. I mean, again, there's the news clippings in the book, Deep Cover, Shallow Graves. Everything that Ralph and I are talking about, we're backed up with documentation. We point the way where people can go and verify this crazy story, you
I want to
know.
go back to the abort team for a minute, just be very clear. Do you know the origin, what agency they're with, who was in charge? What could you tell us about them?
Well, the team, like I say, this was a military type intelligence gathering deal, the Pentagon. So the origin of the team originated recruitment out of a special ops team out of the Pentagon. This was before Green Beret, Delta Forces, and stuff like this. So the abort team, I wouldn't, I don't know who they were, how they got formed. I mean, I could sit here and speculate, and you know, like everybody else, and give a bunch of ideas out there. But to be honest, I don't know.
They
Didn't
were.
care.
It appears as though they were formed pretty ad hoc and kind of
Yeah.
at the last minute. Everything was at the last minute. So the abort team was formed like 2 days before the assassination, and Tosh had to fly to different. He flew to Tampa to pick up Johnny Roselli. He flew to New Orleans to pick up E. Howard Hunt. So it appears as though this was just sort of put together at the last minute. getting people from different backgrounds who could possibly identify groups of shooters. So it kind of indicates that they didn't know that much about the assassination, just that it was going to happen in Dallas, and it involved some elements of either the Cuban exile community or CIA operatives or mafia. That's why they had Johnny Roselli there.
We got to keep in mind the big picture at that point in time. There was many operations going on at that time. This was just one of many. We had, all kinds of stuff in the Caribbean, the Cuban situation. Hell, there was stuff going on over in the Middle East at that point in time. So these special op deals that we were flying all over the place, it wasn't just one deal. I mean, there was a bunch of them. I don't know. I just want to clarify that. I mean, it wasn't. Our position was sitting around an airport, just another flight. Johnny Roselli was a good friend of mine. We used to hang out at the Grace Ranch. Chauncey Holt was a friend of mine. I mean, his daughter calls me Uncle Tosh. I mean, we knew we were a tight group long before JFK. And we knew each other. Howard Hunt and I knew each other. Chauncey Holt and I knew each other. The Grace Ranch. All this kind of stuff came to the surface years after JFK. But there was operations going on through gun running, stealing guns from National Guard armories and transporting them all over the country. So that's what our job was. Our job was facilitators.
And at that point, members of the mafia were working very closely with the anti-Castro community and the CIA.
Yeah, well, they had a joint interest.
One of the things that people asked, how did we get paid? Talking about mafia, Johnny Roselli was a friend. Sam Giancana knew, John Martino run the casinos in Havana. That's how we got paid. We used to get chips from John Martino would give us chips from the Tropicana of Havana, and that's we would cash them in, and that's how we got cash. We didn't get paid chips from Dodge Corporation or Atlantic Richfield or Intermountain Aviation or all these CIA front companies. We didn't get paid like that. We got paid in a very short time. In Miami, we got paid by Martino with a handful of chips that we would cash in Havana. One of our jobs was to fly drunk politicians with their girlfriends from Havana back to Marathon Key, covertly drunk, trying to get them sobered up so they can go to Washington, D.C. and vote. That was what us bus drivers used to do.
The precursor to the Epstein files, huh?
That's right.
They had a place in Washington, D.C., Baker. I can't remember. But anyway, there was a Baker.
The Quorum Club.
Quorum Club, yeah. Had a whorehouse.
Am I surprised? No, because Congress is a big whorehouse today.
It was like a couple blocks on Capitol Hill.
I got to ask you this. I got to swing for the fences here on this question here. Yeah. Do you have any idea what Oswald's role in this, other than being set up for the patsy? What do you think?
Well, he was set up. He was set up.
He was definitely set up.
Yeah.
And it dawned on him in the last few minutes of his life that he was set up.
He was actually got wind of the conspiracies. Right. And was trying to report back to the Kennedys.
Back to the
Did he try to go to James Hostie about that with that information? Because that's what we heard.
Well, and Hostie destroyed those files. There was a whole dossier on Lee talking about to FBI about this alleged assassination. It wasn't only Dinkin. There was a lot of people that was talking about Kennedy going to be hit. It was no secret.
Dave, have you read Ed Haslam's book?
No.
Dr. Mary's Monkey?
I've talked enough about it. I'm familiar with the concepts, but I haven't read it. No.
So Lee Harvey Oswald was involved in that. during the summer.
Right.
It was his role. His role was that they were creating a virus that was a rapidly spreading virus that
Right.
they were going to hand over to a Cuban agent who was going to bring it into Havana and try to infect Fidel Castro. And it was Lee Harvey Oswald's role to carry it in a thermos, like a specially sealed thermos, to Mexico City. And that's why he was in Mexico City. And the Cuban agent never showed up.
So see, there's a whole new side of this story that needs to be told. And we'll probably, I'm not speaking for Ralph, but we'll probably expand upon what we're talking about here. I'm 88 years old, and truth needs to be out there about JFK. We're spending all this time about one deal, JFK. There was hundreds of operations similar to JFK, assassination plots on foreign leaders. MK Ultra, poisoning people, killing people, shooting people. My gosh, I mean, there's a world out there that the 8 to 5 everyday working person cannot even begin to comprehend that was going on in the 60s and the 70s. So my feeling is that story needs to be told. In other words, it's not a question of us trying to tell a story. We're trying to point the way for the people to get off their butts and go out there and look at the damned evidence that's available. You've got to know where that evidence is. And I don't like to say fortunate enough to play a part in all that, but I did play a part in that. And I know where some of the bones are buried. And that's what this book does, Deep Cover Shallow Graves, is the beginning of pointing people where to go to get the documentation to show how the JFK assassination was planned and executed and why.
You know
All
what?
kinds of.
Almost no one knows about the abort team.
No. And
Almost no one. I
that's
think
purposely covered up.
this is the biggest bombshell of our interview right here, is that there was a team that tried to stop it. I know that I forget the name of the regiment from San Antonio, National Guard, they were supposed to be on the grassy knoll and they got canceled and the Secret Service protection was canceled. Open windows, Kennedy's lead car. I mean, it was a pretty extensive, plot, but the abort team is something that people are going to sit back after listening to this interview and go, holy crap. How extensively do you cover that in the book? And we got about 2 minutes left.
We cover it pretty as extensive as you can in a book. I mean, like I say, we write 3 or 4 books just about that day and what led up to it, and maybe we might do that. We don't know yet. We're going to see how this plays out. But the abort team is a very important link to the JFK. Now, the reason that you don't hear about the abort team, my house was burned down in Grant, Colorado in 1980 when I was working on another book titled The Black Knights of Cuba. It got burned down because I was covering the abort team being set up to stop the assassination of JFK. Jim Mars and Bernard Fensterwall and myself wrote a letter off for an FOIA to get all the files pertaining to this very specific, pertaining to what we're talking about right now.
Right. Jim thought the abort team was like a vigilante group just thrown together, and you've kind of indicated that.
That's what it was. I mean,
What it shows, Dave, is that there were different elements of the government
Right.
that were not in a line in terms of what was going on and the Kennedy and the planning behind the Kennedy
Oh, and
assassination.
you know what? We're seeing that with Charlie Kirk right now with
That's right.
Joe Kent and the counterterrorism department. Tulsi
Right.
Gabbard wasn't on board with the FBI cover-up. So I've seen this in real time. Gentlemen, we are out of time. How do people get the book? This is fascinating.
You can go get it at a bookstore, or the easiest way to get it is on Amazon. It comes out April 14th, and it will be available everywhere.
Okay, and the name of the book again is
Deep Cover, Shallow Graves.
Deep Cover, Shallow Graves. Our guest has been Tosh Plumley and Ralph Pezzullo, and I guarantee you, 99% of you have never heard of this stuff, most of it. And this stuff needs to be looked at. because I'm going to write an article on this after I read your book, and I'm going to compare the Charlie Kirk assassination to this because I already see the parallels.
Wow.
This
Interesting.
is phenomenal, guys. Hey, thanks so much for coming on. And as things
Thanks for
develop, and
having
if you go
us.
to a part two, get a hold of me. We'll get you back on.
Okay.
Got a
Thank you,
scoop,
Dave.
guys. Thanks a
Thank you
lot.
very
Take care.
much.